Welcome back to another episode of Word Balloon. This is John Suntress. Today, a conversation with writer Mike Baron. In the 1980s, Baron had two independent hit series, Nexus, co-created with Steve Rude, and The Badger. Mike wrote years of stories about the Punisher in Marvel Comics and penned the initial post-crisis run on The Flash, establishing Wally West as the first former sidekick to graduate to solo hero status. Currently, Mike writes Nightclub, an Image horror title with artist Mike Norton, and coming to webcomics, The Hook, with artist Gabe Altaïr. Our conversation begins discussing an essay Mike posted at his website, bloodyredbaron.com, about the writing lessons he learned in college. You talked about your early years and your writing influences, and I found it interesting to read in college. You took a course written by Jerry McNeely.
Yes.
This was a Marcus Welby writer?
It was so long ago, and I think I wrote down Jerry's outstanding lesson, which was you make them laugh a little bit, you make them cry a little bit, you scare the hell out of them, and that's entertainment.
Was it just creative writing in general? Was it writing specifically screenplay style?
It was creative writing in general.
Did you ever discuss with him, or did he ever get into any of the specifics of screenwriting or anything?
Yeah, we chatted a little bit about that, but and I always had it in the back of my mind to do it. And in fact, I am doing it now.
I noticed that you had a screenplay from, was it 2004?
You're speaking of the Iron Triangle.
Yes. What's the status of that?
Well, the status is...
Usual?
There's no status. I mean, I haven't had any offers on it yet.
Okay.
The competition is very fierce, as you can imagine. Everybody
in
Hollywood has a screenplay they're trying to peddle, and some of them are quite good. The reason I'm doing it is I had a good idea in that case, and I do know enough people that I think I can get it read, so I am trying to get a movie made.
That's cool. Are there other screenplays as well?
Yes, I've written a couple of others. I'm about to circulate my horror screenplay.
Are there other genres as well that you're pitching around?
I've written a romantic comedy I'm very proud of, and I'm going to write another one.
Very cool. I noticed, too, early on in your career, you mentioned that you wrote record reviews for an alternative newspaper.
Many alternative newspapers.
And coming from college radio, I kind of had that same similar path. It was fun back then, the promise of just free music as long as you, help publicize an up-and-coming artist.
Yes, it was fun to discover artists and discover your musical taste.
Reading your essays online, I noticed that you discussed the changes in popular music, and the fact, too, that with the advances in technology, you don't need a big record company anymore to promote a sound. And you even made the allusion to Chairman Mao's, 1,000 flowers.
Yeah, let 10,000 blossoms bloom.
I wonder, do you obviously see similarities in the comic book world as well with the independent books being published?
They're both pop culture, and I'm fascinated with both, and I'm always trying to put them both together, such as The Hook,
mm-hmm.
which we're doing now for Big Head Press. But my taste in pop music is very different from my taste in comics, because music is not storytelling. It can be. I mean, a lot of music is a form of storytelling, but the type of music I like is I'm very interested in melodic structure and harmony and the kind of tunes the Beatles did, which we call power pop.
Mm-hmm.
And they try and create an emotional epiphany, whereas in a comic book you're trying to tell a story, which doesn't mean emotional epiphanies can't or shouldn't occur. They can and they should occur. It's just that one is a storytelling experience where you bring characters alive, and the other is a musical experience, which depends as much on the virtuosity of the instrumentation as it does on the songwriting and singing.
I understand. What I was wondering, though, was taking it more from the distribution of music, comparing it to the distribution of comics. It's funny, especially with what Diamond did recently in terms of declaring that, books had to sell a certain amount or they wouldn't be featured anymore in previews. Music had the same kind of, collusion, really, for a lack of better words, where they really were stopping people from distributing their music. Luckily, things like the Internet have come along to help get the work out there. And I'm wondering if, with projects like The Hook, you're following the same kind of path.
I'm not an expert at selling. The fellows at Big Head Press are convinced they know how to make money at this. And I say more power to them. I don't know of anybody who's making money off of web comics right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people are making money off of downloadable music. But one of the reasons the distribution channels has changed so much is that really the music companies are collapsing all around us. It's the end of an era.
Yes.
And there, it's going to be kind of a scramble to find out what's going to replace them in terms of distribution. This is good in a way because the music companies were dinosaurs and they would always catch on to a trend when it was already over and then beat it to death. And in many ways, they were deaf on innovation because they only wanted to emulate last year's hit.
Sure, what's safe?
Hollywood. So they won't take chances on new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, if you are internet savvy now, every band can have a website and sell their records over the internet.
Let's talk about the hook and its connection to music. It reminds me of Tooth of the Crime, the Sam Shepard play.
I'm not familiar with that.
It's kind of got that same vibe where there's like kind of warring factions represented by different styles of music. And I really like what I've seen in, as far as the webcomics so far online. It looks like it's going to start full swing in March.
Yes.
And you're writing the stories. And
Gabe El Taib is the artist.
Thank you.
And he lives in Greeley, and he's the colorist, too. He's very vivid. And you can view his stuff at GabeElTaib.com. It's GabeElTaib. His last name is Beetle, spelled backwards.
It's a cool-looking story, and again, I think it's a neat combination of, you know, each music style represented in art and very clearly each character representing the style of music that,
yes,
they, that they're
you.
Coming
We're
from.
We're thinking of actually linking the story to certain websites and music sites and downloadable songs.
Very cool. That's excellent. Let's go back to your early comic book years. I enjoyed Nexus and the Badger. Let's start with Nexus. Both ideas started at Capitol Comics?
Yes.
How did Nexus begin? You and Steve Rude creating
an
amazing character.
We were working on some stuff. We really hadn't thought of a superhero, but the boys at Capital City Distribution said that they were interested in publishing. They definitely wanted a superhero. So at that point, we started thinking about one, and we came up with Nexus.
This was one of the great comics of the 80s. It came at the right time when the independent publishers really were able to step up and compete with the mainstream. It was a great seller.
It was an okay seller. If it
really?
Was a great seller, it'd be selling today.
However,
we are planning to bring it back. Steve has created his own publishing company. Rude Dude Comics are going to publish both Nexus and the Moth.
Very cool. I've seen Steve's designs too for the Nexus cartoon on his website, and
it
was a good companion at first with American Flag and that kind of post futuristic, you know, take on. Good themes, interesting themes.
American Flag was post-apocalyptic. We were future.
And I liked your comparison, too, to Russian novels. And it's interesting because, you know, you've got a character named Horatio, and Hornblower immediately came to mind when you think of that. But
that occurred to me, too.
But, yeah, talk about the Russian hero and the conflict of what the Russian literature, you know, theories are and beliefs are.
They are a gloomy bunch. I've been rereading Gogol lately. He wrote Taras Bulba. Most people may be familiar with that because it was a wild movie with Yul Brynner and the Russian steppes. And he also wrote a series of short stories which kind of define the Russian character. My favorite is The Nose, and it's about this minor military official in St. Petersburg who wakes up one morning and he realizes his nose is gone. Not only is his nose gone, his uniform is gone. Because the nose is out there parading around as him. And this causes him a lot of confusion and trouble when he tries to convince people that it's really him and not the nose in his uniform. Because he runs into the bureaucracy. And it's the kind of absurd, funny little parable that Gogol excels at in showing the existential nature of Russian life.
I do want to talk about the Badger because that was always my favorite. I spoke to Mike Norton a few months ago, and I know Mike has done work with you, and we're going to talk about...
Well, we're working on a project that's coming out right now, which is Nightclub.
Yes.
An image.
Yes, and I want to talk about Nightclub, but in regards to the Badger, he reminded me that First had odd distribution because he even said that he found the First comics at like a greeting card store instead of, you know, a prestige comic store. And I thought that was kind of interesting. But the Badger really had a neat look and also just the fact that you were dealing with, you know, schizophrenia in a superhero.
Multiple personalities, actually.
Okay, yes, thank you. Not being a doctor.
I'm not a doctor either, and now my whole universe has been thrown into a cocked hat because some modern medical people are telling me that multiple personality has been completely debunked, that it doesn't exist, that it's a false diagnosis, and that all these cases are people either faking it or they're being misdiagnosed or they're being embellished by their biographers. The jury's still out on that.
Wow. And the Badger having, was it eight personalities?
Yes.
Wow. And of course, his great line, oofta.
Well, actually, a lot of that is just vernacular. I picked up around Wisconsin. That's a very common phrase.
Sure. Yeah. Is it Polish or
German? Know, it's Scandinavian, actually.
Okay.
Scandinavian.
Okay. Now, you know, for people who don't know about the Badger, he kind of had the claws that, you know, you might associate initially with Wolverine, but
no, actually those claws that you're referring to were in one issue, and they are an ancient ninja weapon that I got out of an issue of Black Belt magazine.
Okay. Wow. Now that's interesting because memory made me think that the claws were part of his persona.
You know, we didn't mind the comparison.
Well, and I guess because I even remember the character out of costume but having the claws. So maybe that was just part of the story and something, and that's just an image that kind of stood out for me. Something else?
They were tremendously visual, these huge spiked claw things, one of those ancient Japanese weapons. Make a mess of you.
But yeah, this was a character that was fighting himself as much as whatever was in front of him.
Yes.
And a lot of humor and really maybe the lessons of Jerry McNeely in terms of the things that you put
so.
In this book.
The Badger's a very liberating character to write. It's probably the most liberating character and the easiest for me to write because he follows a less than linear path.
Okay. I also thought that there was a lot of really graphic, not only violence, but in terms of Ham's character, was it Ham that was the magician?
Yes.
And how would he explain, for people who don't know, how Ham was able to cast his spells?
Well, I always operate under the theory that magic isn't easy. It's not a matter of learning a few spells and saying them, that it's a very costly, labor-intensive enterprise. And in Ham's case, he uses blood sacrifice, and he has to sacrifice the animals himself. Of course, it's not easy to butcher a hog single-handedly.
And they made for very interesting, striking images. Was there complaints? Was there concern over?
I've never had a complaint.
Good.
because that anybody who opens the book realizes that its primary purpose is to entertain them. I'm not delivering any kind of message, and I'm not trying to offend anyone, except everyone.
The Badger's come back a few times. You had a run with Image a few years back. Are you thinking about bringing back the Badger?
I'd love to bring him back, and I have the whole series is actually written out. And of course, I've been trying to learn how to write all these years. And this is a little more focused than anything that's ever appeared before. So we'll see.
But okay. Anyway. Well, that, you know, I wish you luck with that. Another one of your essays, you talk about writing. I should mention bloodyredbaron.com. That's your website.
Yes.
And a lot of your writings are there. And you also write for one of the web page, the comic web pages.
Well, I have a column on nostomania.com.
There's examples of that on your site, but then if you go over to Nostomania.
The Nosto is the new stuff, and then once it's a month old, then I stick it in my window.
Okay, very cool. I thought it was interesting. You kind of feel like as you're getting older, and I'm sure many creative people feel this way as well, you almost have to live life before you can really start writing. And, you know, and that's, it sounds like, you know, maybe you're more comfortable with yourself now.
I'm just a slow learner.
Okay. I really enjoyed your run on The Flash.
Thank you.
It was the first Wally West solo books right after Crisis, am I correct?
Right.
Looking at the TV show now that it's back on DVD, many of the ideas from the TV series came from the beginnings of your run.
True.
In terms of Wally's energy levels and even, you know, characters like Tina McGee. How much direction were you given when you first, you know, approached the title?
None.
So all this came from you. Great.
Yes. Yes.
So how did you see Wally West compared to Barry Allen?
I kind of had to create Wally for myself out of the whole cloth because I hadn't been reading the Flash up until then. Of course, I was very familiar with the character, especially from the Infantino years.
Mm-hmm.
But when I took over the Flash right then, I wasn't familiar with what had been going on in the book up until that point. I just got all the background on Wally and wrote him, tried to imagine him afresh using the powers he'd been given.
And also, I think coming up with the idea too that and it kind of ties with Ham's magic. You know, to achieve something has to be taken away.
Well, I was aware that modern readers want a little more realism and they want some kind of explanation so that their fantasy will be more enjoyable. And in the case of a person who traveled at the speed of sound or the speed of light, which of course is impossible, but the amounts of energy necessary to accelerate a body to that speed and keep it together would be enormous. And that's where I got the idea that he had to eat all the time.
You also brought back, characters and redefined them. Vandal Savage being a good example of that, where I think he really took a more elemental look and style in your interpretation than he did in the Kerry Bates series, for example.
Well, you're very kind. I was still learning on the job in those days.
You know, and you were only on it for just over a year, and I've read your assessments of that run, and I have to say, I'm one of those people that I thought it was entertaining as hell, and you know, really, you gave Wally the foundation to be his own man, and I think in built on people like Marv Wolfman that I think fleshed out the character in Teen Titans. Did you ever have any discussions with Marv or even, you know, outgoing Kerry Bates or somebody like that in terms of...
I've had many discussions with Marv, but we've never discussed the Flash.
Okay. Do you ever look now and then see what they've been doing with the Flash these days?
No, John, I don't read that many comics these days. It's not that I'm no longer a fan, it's just my interests have spread out a little bit, and of course, the comics I find most fascinating are my own.
Well, sure.
But I will read anything anybody sends me, and occasionally, my nephew is always turning me on to stuff. He gave me the whole Identity Crisis series, and he made me read Ultimate Iron Man, and I'm grateful to him for that. My friend Pete handed me the latest Jonah Hex, and I was rather impressed with that, and so, I do keep my finger in.
How about back in the day? What were some of your favorites as a reader?
Well, when I was growing up, Conan the Barbarian was the bomb,
Absolutely.
Barry Windsor-Smith was drawing that. And then the first Swamp Thing go-around with Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson, I loved that stuff. Anything Starlin did, anything Neil Adams did. Denny O'Neill always knocked me out as a writer. I think he's the definitive Batman writer. Alan Moore came along, the whole Watchmen thing.
Sure. So that's neat. It sounds like the Bronze Age especially really, kind of captured your imagination.
They used to call that, I guess it is the Bronze Age.
What did they used to call it?
Oh, I don't know. When we were in it, it was the future, It was happening. It was cutting edge. Now it's
next month's issue. Any of the Warren horror stuff? Did you ever read any of that?
Oh, yeah. Anything by that Richard Corbin drew, I would pick up. But,
sure.
But a lot of those Warren stories, they just didn't work for me. They just came so close. But the writing just, with a few exceptions, Archie Goodwin was a very reliable writer.
Did you ever work with Archie?
Yes, I did.
Man, everyone loves that guy. And it should make any younger reader want to reach back and check out some of his stories. He was a great writer.
He's a great guy and a great writer.
And from what I hear, a great editor as well.
Yeah, he was a real sweetheart.
That's cool. As we're talking about Archie, we should talk about Marvel and your Punisher work. You started on 65 issues of the regular series?
Yes, it's called the Black Hole Period.
Why?
Because it's never been reprinted. None of them.
Why?
I have no idea.
That's crazy.
Yeah, some of them were quite good.
Absolutely. No, there must have been a reason to have you on for over 5 years straight.
Well, Carl Potts was my editor then, and like so many regimes in both Hollywood and communist countries, when the old regime is swept out and the new regime establishes power, they systematically kill every program the old regime had going.
Sure. There's a hefty body of work out there. I enjoyed your review of the Punisher movie, and I think most Punisher fans would agree with...
Marvel's curse is they have to keep remaking it until they get it right.
And you brought up in the review, and I'm glad you said this, because should I ever track Jerry Conway down, I have to find out where Don Pendleton's executioner's, character came into forming the Punisher. That's too coincidental, and obviously.
Oh, there's no question that Jerry ripped off the Executioner. There's no question about that.
Well, and I guess Pendleton, if I'm correct, I believe he supported the Punisher. He liked the idea of the Punisher.
I wasn't aware he was even still alive. There was a Punisher book a couple years back. I mean, a straight Executioner book. But by the time they got around to adapting Pendleton's stories for comic books, the comic book had moved way beyond that in terms of dynamics and storytelling and relevance.
Relevance
is what we had.
What were your shades of Frank Castle that differed from Don Pendleton's Executioner? Or how did you approach Frank Castle, I guess?
Well, I did read The Executioner when I was growing up. But by the time I started writing The Punisher, I couldn't really remember The Executioner, although Don Pendleton was an excellent pulp writer.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't write stories that froze in your brain. My take was to make it a straight crime drama. I didn't want any superhero or supernatural elements in it initially, and when they did show up, it was at my editor's behest, and it was no longer Carl. But when I started, I wanted a straight crime comic. And Frank Castle's not that difficult to understand. He's a man obsessed, much like Batman was, because his family was wiped out, except that he had a peculiar flavor to him, which was his Catholic guilt and his need to take confession on a regular basis. He took that very seriously. And if I had worked with him, if I continued to work with the Punisher, had an opportunity to do more stories today, I think it would deal with his crises of faith, to see if there's any faith left there.
It seems then that there is some remorse in your Punisher then, as opposed
tremendous.
To...
Tremendous.
And that's interesting compared to kind of the machine, almost Terminator-like style he's written in now, where maybe he's...
Darth Ennis.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and I'm entertained by it, but yeah, that he is over the edge, and if there is any remorse or guilt, it's not there anymore. He's basically psychotic.
That's one take on it. I have to say I admire the current Punisher very much.
Yeah, I think it's
not the way I would do it, but it's a hell of a book.
That's cool. Who was your artist back then on your run? Or were there several?
Initially, it was Wils Portacio. Dave Ross did a couple of issues.
Okay.
Klaus Janson did the first four issues, or five issues. I shouldn't forget Klaus.
Okay.
He inked the first five issues. Then Wils took over, then Dave Ross. Trying to think of this one guy did these two submarine issues. This terrific old Russ Heath did two submarine.
Oh, that's true. Oh, well, there's a guy that knows how to draw underwater. All the Sea Devil stuff that he did back in the day.
And those are the only. Oh, and Neil Hansen did a couple of issues.
Okay, and you also did several of graphic novels as well.
Yes, I did. One with Bill Reinhold called Intruder, which I'm extremely proud.
Bill's another guy that, yeah, I can see your style and his kind of art really meshing well
together. Yeah, I would love to work with Bill again on The Badger. We've discussed it. We just need a publisher.
Well, would Steve's new company possibly be a place?
I don't think so. Okay. It's really a boutique company just to do the books that Steve is drawing.
I see. Let's talk about Dead Man, Love After Death. You did it with Kelly Jones.
Right.
And you came from that Neil Adams era of Dead Man, and this is certainly from a look standpoint really was a huge departure from, I think, the look that Neil established.
Well, I wanted to do a horror story and not a superhero story.
And Dead Man was very emaciated in response to that.
Right, and of course that played to Kelly's strengths, too. I mean,
sure.
He was not about to draw Dead Man as an over-muscled guy.
But was it was a dead ballerina, wasn't it, that he was in love with?
Yes.
Very cool. Yeah, I remember that story. That was again, another one of those, when the prestige format... When the material actually like justified the title prestige format, that's the kind of thing Dead Man Love After Death was, in my opinion.
Well, thank you. Looking for love in all the wrong places.
Talk about Nightclub, your zombie book with Mike Norton.
Well, now that Mike is back on board, I'm thrilled, although Kareem Whelan did an incredible job filling in on issue number two, and I would love to work with him on something. We've concocted a story in which Hell's minions nearly take over the earth.
Okay.
It's hair's breadth at the end. And there's some stuff in here that's just so appalling, you're just gonna have to laugh. Either that or throw up.
So
Satan's minions spread across the earth.
Starting in Boston.
Yes.
That's cool. Now you're in Colorado and Mike is here in Chicago.
Yeah, I used to live in Boston.
Okay.
Actually, it's based on a real bar that used to be there when I was living in Boston, which was in the 70s, and I expect it's no longer there.
So it's not the Bull and Finch. This isn't Sam Malone's place. Okay. Yeah. I also wanted to talk about some of your...
I have a project with Big Head called The Architect. It's a graphic novel loosely based on the life of Frank Lloyd Wright. It's a horror story.
Oh, talk about that, yes.
And Andy Tong is the artist. There's samples up at Big Head, I believe, and on my own website, Bloody Red Baron. It's based on an incident in Wright's life in 1929. While he was away on business, his mistress, Maman, and her kids were in the dining room when a crazed gardener locked them in the dining room and set fire to the building. And as people fled from the blazing building, he killed them with an axe.
It's pretty harsh.
It's harsh.
Are there other genres that you haven't attempted yet that you'd like to, that you've still got some germs of ideas of stories?
I sometimes think in genre and sometimes I don't. It just depends on the idea it comes. But I'm definitely a genre person.
Okay.
Right now I'm thinking about romantic comedies as the new genre.
Sure. Is there enough of a market where you'd like to try and do something in comic form with a romantic comedy?
No. I'm thinking of this for film.
Purely for film.
You know, I don't think you could, because a romantic comedy appeals to a broad-based audience and to women, too. And the type of comic book work I'm doing does not appeal to women. I'm not trying to write a love story. I'm trying to write the type of comics that I would enjoy. But when I write a romantic story, a romantic comedy, I hope, it's also something that I would enjoy, but for a much broader audience. I don't think the audience would support a romantic comedy in comics, unless it's one of the manga-type things from Japan, Tokyo Pop, those stories which appeal to teenage girls. But I can't write that, because those stories are written by teenage girls. So.
Well, I was wondering, because I noticed a lot of writers are starting to take Tokyo Pop up and doing it. Is there really a different story style to the manga?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Can you?
And it's not that I would hesitate to write a story for teenage girls, because writing is an act of the imagination. And if we start cutting ourselves off from imagining things because it's not in our background, for example, a white person cannot write about a black experience, then all of a sudden you're missing great works of art like The Confessions of Nat Turner by mm-hmm. William Styron.
Okay.
And you're missing The Three Musketeers by Alexander Dumas, who was a black man.
Yes. Yeah.
So we always have to be real careful about limiting ourselves. It's just that I don't feel confident writing for teenage girls right now.
I noticed that you have two comic book novels that I was able to find to your credit. The Witchblade novel from a couple years ago. First, I wanted to ask about the Green Lantern book that you co-wrote with Christopher Priest.
Yes.
It was about Kyle Rayner.
Right.
And did you guys plot it together? How did that work out?
Chris worked out a plot, a very detailed plot, which he gave to me.
I see, and you finished the script.
Yes.
Okay. I remember reading that. I thought that was, pretty true to Kyle, and I thought it was a neat story.
Well, it's kind of you to say so. I still am trying to learn how to write prose. I'm sure that it's going to be an ongoing experience throughout my life.
Was Witchblade a better experience then?
I think so.
Okay. What was that story about?
It was about the ghost of a dead samurai murdering sword collectors to try and retrieve all the swords that had been made by this legendary sword maker. I had a lot of help with that. And there's a lot of background in there about the famous Japanese sword makers and fighters. And, of course, this ghost proves very simpatico with the Witchblade, which is another, in a sense, martial spirit that's mm-hmm. attached itself to a living person.
Very cool. Do you see yourself doing more? Would you like to do more licensed novels, or would you like to stick with original ideas?
No, I'd rather do my own stuff.
Sure.
I've been plugging away at it off and on for many years and with some success. Well, not much, obviously, because I haven't gotten anything published. But I have a couple of manuscripts that I think are publishable, highly publishable. You just need a break. It's an awful, awful experience to try to break into novels without some kind of inside grease or something.
Sure.
I'm lucky to get my stuff read. Here where I live in Fort Collins, I can't swing a dead cat without hitting another would-be novelist.
Big writer's community.
Well, I was invited to Poudre Valley Authors Day at the University of at Colorado State, and I was thrilled until I got down there and found out that they'd invited 600 authors.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. So do you, you know, are you traveling around? I mean, I'm sure you have a...
I don't travel.
Okay. So just a literary agent and just, you know, kind of pitching the stuff.
Well, I no longer have a literary agent. She gave up on me. She said, Mike, I just can't sell your stuff. I'm sending it all back. So I'm setting that on the back burner for now.
Okay. Well, you know, is there a possibility where an idea might start as a comic book and you might then adapt it for novels? It's funny.
Absolutely. That happens all the time.
Yes.
Right now, I'm doing the reverse. I had an idea for a huge novel, and I realized, well, this thing, you know, this, to be done properly, it'd be like 840 pages, and that's just... I'm having a hard time writing a short novel, so I'm reverse deconstructing it, and I'm going to try and do it as a series of comic books.
I mean, it's working for Greg Rucka. Look what, you know, and he came from novels.
Greg is an extremely accomplished writer of prose and a very successful novelist.
I completely agree. I enjoy his novels, and I'm enjoying his...
I wish, you know, if I had a track record as a novelist first... then I'd be doing what he's doing.
I got you. But I wonder if, I think that's great that you're starting with the base of, you know, approaching your audience, an audience that does appreciate your work in the comic book world, and maybe graduate the series to novels later on. Hope it happens.
We'll see. Maybe my comic book will be such a hit that I could be able to license the novels out.
There you go. Exactly. Hey, like Matt Wagner, or like you did yourself for Witchblade, or, you know, did it yourself as someone who came onto a licensed property. That's cool.
No, I'd rather write it myself.
I also heard that you have a Legends of the Dark Knight in the works.
Well, I think that title's been squelched, so my three books are going to appear under the regular Batman imprint.
Okay. Who's the artist for that?
John K. Snyder.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, that's great. Can you give us a little clue of what the story's about?
It's a riff on a very old story that, as far as I know, was first created by Dashiell Hammett in Red Harvest. And it's about this lone guy, the Continental Op, who falls into a little mining town where there are two criminal gangs at war with each other. And he thinks there's a buck to be made here by playing the gangs off against each other. And this was later adopted into a movie by Akira Kurosawa called Yojimbo.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the great samurai movies.
You bet.
And it's been done again and again. Most recently, you know, is Last Man Standing, starring Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dreadful version, and I advise everyone to stay away. But it's a play on that, in that there are two criminal Yakuza gangs spreading terror across Gotham, and the Batman chooses a member of one of these gangs, a disillusioned Yakuza, as his pawn to try and play the two gangs off against each other. And it's all about duty and honor and how far Batman can drive this poor guy without taking into consideration the guy's own problems.
That sounds great. That sounds really cool. In some ways, and I think wrong for the character, a little bit like the Punisher film, where, you know, he was trying, in, again, a very uncharacteristic way to turn gangs against themselves. Or not.
Yeah, you know, the Punisher thing is just... didn't find the right tone.
Okay.
And I felt that Thomas Jane was not the right guy to play the character.
Oh, really? That's interesting, because, you know, who would you see as the Punisher?
Well, I don't know. It's just that Jane didn't really project much charisma.
You okay.
Know, your eyes were not drawn to him on the screen. I mean, you imagine somebody like Steve McQueen up there or
McQueen's a good choice, although I think it's funny. I see him almost as too short to be the Punisher.
Yeah, no,
not that
I'm
it would matter.
I'm not suggesting him as the Punisher. I know this. I can see this guy's face in front of me. He was a villain in one of the Batman films, but it doesn't help me anymore.
Tommy Lee Jones?
You know, that would be a better choice.
Okay, because, yeah, that's as soon as you said that. Because, actually, I could see Tommy Lee Jones being it. He'd be a hell of a Frank Castle.
Yeah.
Well, the Dark Knight story sounds great. And is it scheduled in specifically with, you know?
No, because Snyder hasn't finished the third book yet.
Gotcha. Well, that's cool. We'll look forward to that. I think that's really neat. And you know, The Hook obviously starting in March, so that's cool. That'll be online.
Yeah, I think The Architect starts in March, too.
Okay, very good. And that's at the website again for those?
Bigheadpress.com.
Bigheadpress.com. And The Architect will be a graphic novel.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that once it's been collected on the web, and I don't know, again, how they're going to do this, it's going to be released as a book.
That's great. Well, we look forward to it, man, and we'll be looking for your Batman story and more of Night Club as well. And I wish you luck. I appreciate your time today. This
You're welcome.
Thank you, man. That's writer Mike Barron. Make sure you check out his website, BloodyRedBaron.com. And thanks again for listening to WordBalloon.com. This is John Suntress. Make sure you keep checking back at the website for upcoming episodes. Word Balloon is a copyrighted feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2006.